The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com. The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com. The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Hi there, it's the analyst Inside Cricket, looking back at the first day of the first test against India, which of course is England's 1,000th test match. I was standing on the sidelines, actually, as you were, Simon, as the players walked out, and it was a real special feeling with Jerusalem playing, knowing it's the first day of England's 1,000th test match, the test matches that started in 1877, and now we've got to four figures in test cricket for England. It was a special feeling standing out by the boundary edge. It wasn't a special day for England, though.
Well, 1,000th test match, and the sort of test match we've seen quite a lot recently. Yeah. We've seen it, you know, happen a lot to England, happen all over again. Disappointing batting display, and India right back in the game. At 216 for three, it felt as if England were moving towards a position of real strength in the game. A score of 400 in the first innings, as it looked as if they were capable of getting, I think would have been decisive. But now it's right back in the balance.
We had quite a lot of discussion on Test Match Special today at lunchtime about the 1,000th Test Match and various features of it. One of the things that I noticed, actually, was that it doesn't really make much difference if you win the toss or lose the toss, because over England's 1,000 Test Matches, they've won 178 Test Matches winning the toss and won 179 Test Matches losing the toss. They won the toss today. They made the obvious decision to bat first. I thought it was a pitch which looked furry, grassed on top. It looked fine to bat first. It was quite a nice day. I thought it was absolutely the right decision. I actually thought that England would get 450 for once, but no. And, you know, it was a fascinating little duel that went on, really, through the day, with particularly with Ravi Ashwin bowling his off-spin, and a guy that we haven't seen, well, two guys we haven't seen anything of, Ashwin and Mohammad Shami, the faster bowler from the other end. And those two really kept England in check throughout the day and took six wickets, I think, between them. But it was just generally a day where I felt England weren't quite on it. You know, there were times when they were, but they didn't drive the initiative home, especially at that key point, 216 for three.
You know, the run out, the big moment of the day. I just couldn't understand why they came back for the second run. Normally with a run out, you look to, you know, someone's at fault, aren't they? One batsman is normally at fault, but it didn't look, from how I saw it, that Root wasn't keen on the second. Root was bombing back for the second as well. Bairstow was really intent on two. They were looking to be busy. It was just a mistake on both their parts, really. Bairstow judging there was two there, and the same with Root. I mean, normally in a situation like that, you know, one batsman really hesitates and then there's a mix-up. You know, one calls the other one through. But that wasn't the case. But it just struck me as being inexplicable, the fact they came back for the second, especially because of who the ball went to or went near, Virat Kohli.
Well, and I do think with Bairstow that he's so fast between the wickets that sometimes it's hard to keep up. And I actually remember asking Joe Root once what it was like to bat with Bairstow, and he said, well, yeah, it's tough because he is so quick and he's so hungry for those twos all the time. And sometimes it gets a bit compulsive. And there, I think it was just, well, I'm going to come back for two. I've got to come back for two, almost as if he's been still batting in the white ball game where they're very good at knocking the ball into the gaps on the leg side and running twos because most of the fielders are on the boundary. So there was sort of a bit of a kind of one-day mindset still going on, I think, in the England batting, and especially in that part, especially in the way that Bairstow batted generally. Do you know, I counted up his 88 balls. You know, I know I need to get out more. Only two he left alone.
Remarkable stat, actually, isn't it? For a test match number five.
I'm not counting two bouncers, which he ducked under, but two outside off-stump balls, which he left alone. Those are the only two. Other than that, he was at the ball all the time. Sometimes he hit it cleanly, beautifully, hard, powerfully through the offside or down the ground, but quite often he edged it, outside edges wide of slip, or dabbed it wide of slip off a thick edge, or mishit it slightly back to the bowler. He was sort of at the ball all the time. He wasn't shifting out of that one-day mindset. He's only had two innings, one of them only lasted one ball against the red ball before this game, having had a month and a half of white ball cricket. And it is hard to shift out of that mindset. You know, his batting against the white ball has been absolutely phenomenal. The way he's hit good length balls with a hard new ball against a fast bowler, back pass them or through mid-off in the one-day series. But you can't do that all the time in test cricket with the Duke ball just nibbling and swinging a little bit. In the end, I know he got to 70, and it seems very harsh to criticise him, but he's in such good form, you want him to get 180. Mm. And he got 70, and then he went for one of those slightly risky shots outside off stump of a good length ball, dragged it onto his stumps.
How much?
And again, that let India in.
How much do you think the run out affected him?
It does. You know, that was devastating for England because Root was looking good. He was looking determined. He really set his stall out to bat all day. He wasn't playing those flighty shots outside off stump, which he sometimes does. He was really looking to get stuck in and make, well, maybe even a 200. And he has got a phenomenal record against India, hasn't he? You're going to tell us what it is.
Well,
go on.
In every test match he's played against India, 12 test matches, he's always past 50, either in the first or second innings. It's an amazing record, that, isn't it?
Yeah, it is an amazing record. But he wanted to get one of those hundreds that he's also got against India. He wanted to get a
300s and 950s in those 12 test matches.
And I'm sure that Bairstow would have felt culpable about his wicket, because you can't
I agree that Bairstow was at fault, but Root could also said no.
I know he could, but when you're the runner and you know you're the quickest and you're heading back to the danger end, as Bairstow theoretically was, you can't really see what your partner's doing. You're mainly thinking about yourself and making sure you get in. Okay, you might just cast your eyes back to what's going on at the far end when you realise that's where the ball's going, but only for the last half a second of the incident. So he wouldn't have known that Root wasn't perhaps quite absolutely, you know, galloping to get in. He didn't put a dive in or anything because it was too late in the end. So Bairstow would have felt an element of blame, and he knew how sort of dedicated to the crease Root was today, and you feel as the batsman still out there, it was partly your fault, and that's still exercising your mind, and you're not focused on the ball.
Quite
as much as you were.
Yeah, well, it was partly Bairstow's fault, but it was also partly Root's fault as well. You know, often with a run out, you see a situation where, you know, one of them, you know, stares at the other one, don't they? And there's a sort of shaking of the head, or, you know, a comment is made, or, you know, you go off muttering. But I mean, Root didn't do that. Well, not that I was aware of, not that I could see. I think Root knew that he was to blame as well. He was part of that dismissal as well.
But, you know, Bairstow wouldn't necessarily have known that, which is why these kind of incidents can affect the team. And Bairstow was slightly late or slightly half-hearted in his drive a couple of overs later. He got out, and really that let the Indians back in. Stokes, at the moment, just can't seem to time the ball, and he looks like he is someone who is trying too hard to shift from white ball to red ball and barely playing a shot at all. So when he got a long op, he was in two minds whether to try and nudge it or whack it, and he did neither and sort of just poked it back to the bowler.
He's only passed 50 twice since Auckland in, what, late March, that test match that England played, when he played actually splendidly on the final day and nearly, well, got close to helping save England, say, that test match against New Zealand. He got out just before tea, playing an extravagant shot, but until then he played very in a very disciplined manner, batted for about 4.5 hours. He's trying to play in that quite responsible way. Kevin Peterson used to play in that way, didn't he, for the first 50.
Go from one extreme to the other.
Yeah, and then he would go for it. You know, when he got past 50, he started to play all sorts of shots. And Stokes is giving himself a chance, but, I mean, he's just in that run of form at the moment where it's not quite working for him. And, you know, he made that 50 at Trent Bridge in the one-day international, where he almost batted England out of the game, although they had to try and recover in somehow or other. He made 50 in about 108 balls, and then he made 90 for Durham in a 2020 match. But only two occasions he's passed 50 since Auckland. For a player of his ability, I know he's been injured as well this summer, for a player of his ability, that's slim pickings. Mm.
So overall, if you look at England's wickets, Cook got a good ball, and I don't really think too much blame can be attached to that. You don't expect an off-spinner in the sixth or seventh over coming on with a new ball on the first day to turn one past your bat and hit the top of the off-stump. So that was an inspirational bit of bowling by Ravi Ashwin. Jennings just was a little bit too soft-handed in defence. The ball trickled back onto the stumps, a bit unlucky, but didn't really quite be positive enough in defence. Then we've talked about Root, and Milan, I thought, a bit lazy on the back foot. Probably one of those LBW decisions which could have gone his way on another day, because it was just clipping the top of the leg stump.
And it was umpire's call for impact as well.
Yeah, I mean, it was one of those, if your luck's out, you know, you get that given, and another day it wouldn't have been given. But he just looked a little bit vulnerable, stuck on the back foot, as he quite often does. Then we've talked about Bairstow. Stokes, tame dismissal. And Joss Butler, fairly casual flick to his second ball, just missed it. It wasn't a particularly good ball. It was just a slightly half-hearted shot, which is the kind of shot that he plays. Normally he hits it, today he didn't.
Ashwin took 4 for 60 from 25 overs, fantastic figures, picked up some crucial wickets. I mean, two of them were rather given away, but he also bowled some other excellent deliveries. There's one brilliant delivery he bowled. It's all like almost like an away swinger to Rashid, who actually hit it for 4. It's a remarkable shot. It was brilliantly bowled and brilliantly played. But, I mean, Ashwin, he seems to have a few more tricks than when we last saw him.
He's fascinating, actually. I've talked to him a fair bit. In fact, we've had him on this show talking about bowling, and he's constantly trying to find new ways of getting batsmen out. He's really studies the game in great detail. He's very smart, very intelligent. He's worked a lot with Anil Kumble on different wrist positions and trying to get the ball to come out looking differently but actually behaving the same. So, you know, he's just a very subtle operator, not really doing a huge amount with the ball, but just enough to keep the batsman guessing.
Yeah, well, I mean, he's going to have a big impact on this series. Remarkable coming to Edgbaston today, actually, seeing the lush outfield and just putting my foot on it. And you think, hold on, we must have had about a couple of months of rain. But they've put a lot of water on it, almost to get the... they don't want the conditions that India are desperate for or quite keen on. But surely somewhere along the line, Lord's next week, surely somewhere along the line we're going to have a pitch that really spins. So, you know, Ashwin, you feel you could have a big save. He's already had a big save. What about India's team selection? Only the one spinner. Do you think they were influenced by what England did, that England named their team 4 seamers and 1 spinner? Do you think India were influenced by that? I just wonder what Kuldeep Yadav would have done out there in those conditions today and as the game goes on.
Well, I don't think it is going to turn that much, actually, as a pitch. I think the carpet of grass on it is quite furry, and therefore I don't think it'll turn hugely through the game. It might a bit, but I think they're backing that. I think Mohammad Shami was a good selection. Ishant Sharma and Umesh Yadav, you know, have been their opening pair recently, so they sort of stuck with that and The left arm spinner was a bit of a risk. I spoke to Ravi Shastri actually before the game. He said he's going to come into it definitely at some point in the series. But maybe they wanted to start with a fairly known attack and introduce the X factor a bit later on.
Yeah, I wonder whether Pandya, for want of a better expression, sort of muddies the waters a bit in terms of their selection. Because he's more of a batting all-rounder. I mean, 10 overs for 46... Is a Pandya worth a Kuldeep Yadav? But also, then you want to balance the side as well. So that's one of the great things about a cricket match, isn't it? You've got to select 11, when actually you'd love to have the option of having 12, really, because it just gives you so much more to play with. I just wonder whether you know, Pandya is necessarily the right choice, but you can understand why they play him, because he gives you a bit of both. He gives you some overs with the ball, and he's dangerous with the bat as well. Having said that, you'll probably go out and score 100 tomorrow. No, I've said, you know, that I might prefer a Kuldeep Yadav to a Hardik Pandya.
I suppose they pick Pandya partly on attitude and general contributions. He's also a brilliant fielder. He's someone who I think they feel a bit like Ben Stokes. He's someone who can take a wicket and change a game, and he's always sort of in the game, if you like. So it was probably from that point of view, rather than someone like Kuldeep Yadav, who would only really feature with the ball, probably not much in the field, and not with the bat.
He's got a first-class 100, Kuldeep Yadav.
Yeah, but, you know, Test cricket, I mean, yeah, who hasn't got a first-class 100 in India, apart from me and you?
I accept that. But I just wonder, you know, he is a good cricketer, Pandya, and that's why you have to make it sort of hard. That's why you debate in selection.
I would always like a specialist, actually, someone who's got that little bit of an unusual ingredient.
Therefore, Kuldeep Yadav. Yeah.
So, I would always have gone for that. But the Test match selections are generally more conservative.
Yeah. So, what about this score then? 285 for 9. Are England out of the game?
No, but I think they're 100 under par.
Do you? I don't agree with that.
375, 400, surely. I mean, it's a fast outfield. Mm. You know, it's short boundaries. There's no absolutely, you know, brilliant, unbelievably unplayable bowlers in the Indian team. England have got 8 batsmen, or 7 batsmen plus Sam Curran, decent all-rounder. Why can't they get 400?
Mm. No, I'm saying they were in a position to get 400. I wonder whether 375, 400 is par on that pitch. I think there's enough there for the bowlers. There's enough there to interest all the bowlers.
Well, if you play bad shots like England do, of course there's enough to interest the bowlers all the time, even if you play on a piece of glass.
But even without that, there's enough there to think that England are still in the game. It might well be that, you know, India come out tomorrow and make England score look foolish. But I just... You know, are India that well prepared? Is their batting lineup that well prepared?
Well, that's a good point.
There's enough there in the surface for England still to be in the game.
It's all about
the
red ball.
I think England got 375, 400.
Yeah.
Then they would have been in a really strong position. That's why I think 400 is more than par.
Mm. For 375 actually is about the average score at Edgbaston in a Test match. And if you think back to, you know, the great Test matches we've had here, like the Ashes of 2005, for instance, teams scored around about 300, 320. But I think that particular pitch was drier and cracked. And remember, Warne turned a couple outrageously. This is a better pitch. I think this is a 350 plus 375, 400 pitch. Yeah.
Right. Well, I'm saying 350 might be par, but you're saying you're changing now. You're saying 350 is par. Are you 375 or 400?
No, I'm saying a good batting team should get 400 on there.
Yeah. Well, I think they should have got 400 from the position they were in.
216
to 3. But I think 350 is a par out there in the first innings.
Well, you know.
We'll see how it goes.
I mean, everyone says, you shouldn't judge a pitch until you see both teams bat on it. But maybe the Indians will bat better on it. Maybe England will bowl really well and bowl them out for 240. The weather forecast is pretty good. So it's a great opportunity for India there, really. You know, if they get 400, then they really are in charge. And England can just only got themselves to blame.
Yeah. Well, from the position they were in, I agree, because they've tossed away a decent position.
Well, one thing's in England's favour, and that is in those thousands of Test matches, Edgbaston is their favourite ground. England have won 54% of their matches at Edgbaston compared to sort of 40% and under at all the other grounds. You know, Lords is only 39%, Old Trafford and Trent Bridge are even 36% win ratio. Edgbaston 54% win ratio. So let's have all those Brummies getting behind England tomorrow to cheer them on, cheer Jimmy Anderson on, cheer Stuart Broad on, get into the wickets and get a lead.
Yeah, well, it could be a fascinating game. Those sort of lower scoring games often are. Mind you, it might not be a lower scoring game. England 300, India make 500 and win by an innings.
I don't think so somehow, but we'll find out tomorrow. We'll be back with you at the same time. So in the meantime, thanks for listening.
Sports Social Podcast Network.